Hello and welcome to Wild Time Online with myself, Thomas Janak, here on indiemedia.ie. I'm joined today on Skype by Tom Byrne. Tom has been one of my guests over 2 years ago. He was a phone guest, now he's a Skype guest, and my proxy camera obviously is not supported, so again, we haven't met each other yet, and so we can't even see each other, but I can see him. So anyway, Tom, you're very welcome.
Hi, Tom, it's good to talk to you again. Yeah. I thought I could see you, but I can't see you. It was 2 years since we spoke last.
Yeah, it was March 2008, and the interview is still on the internet.
Oh, so that's good.
So in any case, I uploaded the picture that you sent me on our website, and the official website is www.wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. That's www.wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, and there you can see the picture, because we're talking about this picture today. It's interesting that this picture is based on a movie that you have watched over 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So my immediate question would be, how come 4 decades after seeing this movie, it started to resurface in your memory? What happened?
Well, it's never left, you know. It's actually never left. And what happened was, around the time you contacted me about the Andalusian painting, the horse, you know, that I've been painting piebalds for a year or two before that, and it was a project that I just started. I saw a lot of wild piebalds in the fields, you know, and I eventually, after passing them, and my studio now is up beside horses, you know, but after passing them regularly, I started doing studies of them, you know, and then I moved on to the Andalusian, and it was just really, I started painting this screen, and I started painting it with a small boy on the other side. And it developed into what turned out to be, it was like, it just came from my subconscious, I suppose, and it just developed into that painting. And I realized that it was actually, that's where it was from. It was from the movie, The White Mane, and it was just coming through, you know. So I decided then, and I've been painting this for over 6 months, you know. So it's been taking that long, you know, for it to develop. And that's really how it started.
Okay, so for the people who are not familiar with the movie, it's a French movie.
It's a French movie, and it's a Michael Korski movie, but it was directed by a guy, Albert Lamoureux, and he was an award-winning movie. It obsessed me as a child. It was the first movie that I had seen. You know, I'd seen like movies, say, with Lassie and that, but I'd never seen a movie with just... So it was in French, so I didn't understand it, and I could only understand it visually, and this young boy befriends this wild white stallion, you know, that the French cowboys couldn't tame, you know.
Okay.
And they both committed suicide, and it just never left me, you know.
it's a very interesting concept. When I read about it, I haven't seen the movie, I'm afraid, and you said that the horse committed suicide. That was quite a new one for me.
As I say, it never left me, you know, and the idea that the horse sort of swam off to try and escape, I suppose, into the sea, like you didn't know at the end if he did commit suicide, but you were left to your imagination that he swam off into the depths of the Rhone River, you know, the mouth of the Rhone, and the boy swam out after him, and there's an amazing picture I'll show it to you here now. You'll see it, you probably saw it.
I mean, I remember that you were saying when we sort of spoke that a few months ago, or probably a month ago, I'm not actually sure, you had this, you had one of your paintings actually analyzed by a psychologist.
That's right, yeah, by a psychoanalyst, yeah.
Okay, that's quite interesting, you know. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, I was having a show, I'm an artist of the portraits. I'm an artist of portraits, I suppose, rather than a portrait artist, you know, and I would consider basically all paintings that I do to be portraits, like that's a portrait of a horse, you know, or even a portrait of a mountain, you know what I mean? But these were portraits of sort of well-known people, and I don't know, I just decided that for something different, you know, and maybe it was because having spoken to you as well, that it brought the idea into my mind, you know.
Yeah, we were talking, just for the people who are not aware, back then, you know, we were talking about spiritual guides and power animals and then about metaphors, because I'm a musician. And even though, you know, when my songs are not necessarily autobiographical, I think, you know, the times are very, very reflected in it. When you sort of listen back to stuff, you know, I know exactly where I was. And then people say, oh, yeah, that sounds very 90s. So apparently the times are sort of caught in it.
The psychoanalyst, he's actually a friend of mine, and I asked him to open the show, and I had a classical music guitar, a classical musician playing classical music, and then I thought of some psychoanalysis mixed in with some fine art painting would just make a lovely, unusual mix, you know. And I went down quite well, you know, I was fascinated, which I always wanted. I mean, I've been analysed myself.
I personally think it's really important that, especially as an artist, I mean, you know, they always, probably, you know, different, you know, they a lot of people would obviously quote that I have a big ego because I'm an artist. I think you need a big ego to be an artist and to express yourself in a way. But I think self-analysis is quite a humble process. So when this picture of yours got, or when you got analyzed as such, were there surprises in store? Were there some things you said, I hadn't expected that?
Not really. I suppose the one thing that he pointed out was that a lot of my paintings are singular, you know. There's generally, like, most of the portraits just had one figure in it, you know. But he didn't tear me to shreds, which I hoped he was going to really go deep, you know. But I suppose, okay. Like, as an artist, myself and having been in college and that, you do have to analyze your own work, you know. But what he said is online somewhere. It's out online somewhere anyway.
Okay.
You know. Yeah.
I think the other thing is, you know, when people are listening to this and they know this is in essence an animal rights show, world conservation show, I personally think that, you know, I mean, we're talking about a picture of a horse that you paint there, and a little boy, which is sort of a metaphor for yourself in that sense. That what you learn apparently when you reflect on yourself is you find your own place within that web of life. So when you look at that horse, I mean, 40 years after the story sort of, you know, was first seen by you, it's you know, I think there is this appreciation for nature certainly in your picture.
Yeah, well, as I was saying to you, I hope to go over there now, and I'm planning to go over, Thomas, you know, and I'm trying to sell this screen now to fund it, and I'm going to, whatever I make from selling the screen, I'll use half of it to go over there, and I'll donate the other half then to the RSPCA, you know.
Okay.
But I hope to go over and see the horses over there and do some studies of them over there.
Okay. So that would be France. You basically would go to the Camargue or whatever they landed.
In August. I've never been there, but I heard it's fantastic. You know, these horses, they're not wild horses, they're wild bulls. And I sent you a shot of the pink flamingo sculpture that I made. Mm. And there's wild flamingos living there, you know. And, so I suppose, you know, it's great that the region is kept like that, you know, I mean, so wild and, you know what I mean, for animals to live.
Do you think, is it the wildness that appears to you, or is it the freedom that appears to you, or is it the losing of the habitat that frightens you and you paint it? Have you analyzed, apart from this sort of being probably sort of a throwback to your childhood and whatever you have to, you know, sort of deal with. What elements, or are there elements of the feeling that we're losing habitat or concern for animal welfare? Is that part of your thinking or is it just, I mean, sort of what attracts you to it?
Well, I'm an animal lover, and I always have been, you know, and I've always had animals. At the moment where I'm living, I've only got a tortoise and I've got goldfish, and we have a wild cat that comes and visits us, you know. But I've always been an animal lover, you know, and I suppose, like, the habitat and that, it's great to see habitats. I mean, I suppose over here now, I've spent a lot of time when I lived in the inner city, I'd go up and see the wild deer, and I thought that was amazing up in
Phoenix. Yeah, Phoenix Park, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could get up to like 6 or 7 feet to them, you know. But I mean, it's the habitats these days. Okay, they're wild, but the majority of them are self-controlled, you know, because like they're set out. You know, there you go. We put the animals there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then they basically mischarge everything and have to even cull some of them.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So, the planning is one thing, and then reality, and again, nature is a completely different thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I hate our monoculture, you know? I've always, like, with my paintings, there is always an animal element in it, you know? And I think what you said about the last time about having animal, what did you say?
Yeah, spiritual guide, the power animal.
Yeah, power animal, yeah. I mean, that's a fantastic idea, I think, you know. And anything that will connect people with animals and get rid of this monoculture. I hate the idea that people have to pick up dog shit around the streets. I hate that. I think that's absolutely ridiculous, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a country, it puts people off having dogs, you know.
Yeah.
People don't want to have dogs because they have to do that. And I mean, as a society, I lived with dogs all my life, you know what I mean? I had a dog with me as a kid, all that, and never did me any harm, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not nice to have it all over the place, but we could easily have somebody else cleaning that up, you know what I mean? The team being paid to clean that up, and not the individual, because it puts people off, and it stops the culture of animal owners, you know?
Mm.
It really does.
I mean, it's interesting in a sense that... that when you look at sort of part of this welfare bill and when you talk to the council about animals, it's all about, you know, dog has to be muzzled, dog has to be on the lead, you have to clean up. It's not about the dog, it's about your responsibility as such. I mean, clearly times have changed. It's not that easy for a dog to be let loose these days. There's all sorts of cruelty going on, and they can't really defend themselves when a group of ducks, you know, is at them. So apparently, of course, it is a different world. We're not living in this, you know. This farming country that it was back then, you know, it has changed.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose with people like you, animal rights and everything that's going on, you know, I mean, it does help. I mean, the funny thing is that we have that more to the fore now with the whaling laws, you know, and all that. But yes, you still get then other ridiculous animal laws, you know. I mean, if you're in England, even like a lot of dogs can be brought into restaurants over here. There's no way.
You can't go anywhere. That's one of the things, like, you know, that the very fact that we don't even have proper dog parks. And so, yeah. Apparently we're really behind most countries, you know.
That's great. That's great. And Paris dogs are supposed to be kept on leads. I mean,
yeah.
When I was growing up, I always had a couple of dogs, and I can honestly say I never put a dog on a lead. Mm. Never. Just talk to him, and he'd stay with me. You know, and it's like if you want to let them go. I suppose I don't know about the wild horses, I don't know what they see in that, but I mean, or the bulls and that, but I mean, with the domestic dog, I mean, he just wouldn't want to leave. Mm. You know what I mean? If you restrain him, he wants to get away. You know, I'd have him walking right beside my side with no lead consistently, you know?
Yeah, but you know, in my experience of being a pet psychologist, apparently not everybody is that good a dog person. And sometimes, you know, because they don't take care of them and they roam freely, then things happen. So all the other dogs, obviously, are made to suffer for this one bollocks dog that overreacted or not neutered and spayed and then doesn't come back for hours on end. This kind of way. So it has become difficult. So after you've been to France, what's the next step?
Well, I hope to do at least one canvas over there, you know, if I get at least one, probably two anyway, you know, and I'll do plenty of studies and a lot of photographs, you know, and then I will work on over the next year or so, and I would just paint a couple of paintings of the horses, and compare. So, I mean, as I say, the piebald really started it again for me, and so that'll be what's next.
I know that your paintings are sort of in different places. Will there be a collection of or sort of a follow-up of you going over there? I know in form of a book or an exhibition. Any ideas on that? So that, because the idea would be obviously to hopefully share it with people.
Yeah, well, I haven't. Now I'm hoping to bring out a book. I've been doing a series of studies of the bridges in Dublin, and I'm hoping to bring out some sort of a book on that. So which could be quite expensive, So if I do bring something out, it'll be a long way away, But I don't think it is going to develop. Now, I've met a woman, an old friend of mine. I bumped into her there about a year ago, and she's a horse lover, and she's got two piebald horses herself. She works with the horses in town, I think out in Ballyfermot with the kids.
Yeah.
And she helps them with their horses, But she's got two piebalds of her own. So, and then where my studio is as well, there's a stable right across the road from me, which I plan to do. So it is developing, and it will develop on a deeper level, get more detail. But the Camargian horses, I have to see what they're like, Thomas. I have to see what happens over there. I mean, it could just blow me away, and it could, the painting, you can get totally sucked in, and it just happens so quickly. Or then it could be a struggle, and the ideas don't come, It all depends, really, but it will definitely keep developing, I'd say.
Yeah, you can blend art all you like, if it doesn't come quick, it doesn't come quick, there's not much you can do about it.
No, and that's the way, this isn't coming quick, though, because it's been going on now for 3 years, but that's the fun of it as well, the bridge series has been going on, I suppose, nearly as long,
Okay.
It's just, they take time, and there's no point rushing it, it's a great idea, actually. I'd love to do something with the piebalds and the Camargian horses, and then we're all, then it just branches out, doesn't it?
And especially, I remember years ago, I was still working with UPS back in the day, 7 years ago, whatever, and we helped the Federcan Horse Project to get funding. So we basically helped them sort of cleaning, and then we painted all the walls there, And so one of the ideas obviously would be, if there would have been anyone of your caliber. Instead of painting the wall blue, they would probably have a little a mural there, or some horsey pictures or something so you never know how this all develops.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Is there anything it's not your time yet, but when the time comes that you move on to whatever the next step is, sort of looking back on what you've done over the years, is there anything you really would like to be remembered for, or is there anything that stood out so far in your work where you said that was sort of the highlight of my career?
Not really, maybe this one.
On one side it's quite good because you haven't had that feeling that you had had your highlights and then you just around a bit.
I suppose as an artist you carry on regardless, really. I think I suppose the highlight was being in the Apollo Gallery for me was one of the highlights. I've been in a few other galleries, but when I moved into the Apollo Gallery now, one of the highlights. But I suppose that as an artist, it can be a struggle early on, And if you're a true artist, just carries on regardless.
Yeah, if the art is within you, why stop, you know?
Yeah, I can often dismiss highlights, you know what I mean? I can work on a project for so long, and then as soon as it's done, it's like, okay.
What's the next step? Yeah.
Sitting back sometimes and really enjoying it, you know what I mean? But like with that screen now that I painted, I mean, I've been painting that for 6 months, and I could, you know, I absolutely loved painting it, you know, that way.
Mm.
It was such a joy to paint, you know, and for that, it was like a dream developing, like an old memory and an old, you know, a new dream and an old memory, and
yeah,
so much in it, you know.
And it's also interesting, you know, because it's visual. It might, I mean, it, you know, chances are it will outlive you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice thing. I mean, I'm not a painter, you know. I mean, all my art is on CDs and stuff, you know. So technology might not survive, you know. So that's all I'm saying. Like, you know, so it's nice to have sort of something visual, like images and paintings, you know.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, there is a good survive, though. I mean, they can change it onto something else, you know.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, and it was funny, I was just reading about, I was reading an interview with Elizabeth Payton, who's an American artist, and they were talking about the exact same thing about, you know, especially oil painting, you know, having that sort of, you know, that longevity.
Yeah.
It's something that you don't really think about when you're doing it, you know, I mean,
and probably you shouldn't, because then you become too conscious, you know.
Yeah.
In a way, it is what it is. Often, you know, I have to sometimes, you know, when you look back at things that you've done, you know, some of the things are a thing of their time.
Yeah.
And circumstances and they are what they are, you know.
Well, that's right. I love that, the idea that they're of their time, you know, and they can't really not be of their time, you know. I mean, some artists, I suppose, would be painting, you know, they'd be copying, say, old masters and that, but when you get beyond that, you know what I mean, and you just start, when you've mastered the art of painting, and they have to be of the time, and it's only when you look at that from the future, and, you know, in the future you look at these paintings, you know they're of the time, but
And that's a good thing. I mean, we spoke about this last time, that because everything you do is a portrait, that you sort of, you know, it's like frozen in time on your canvas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Thomas.
For talking to me. And I hope next time the camera works so we can finally see each other face to face.
I'll let you know when I get back.
Yeah, please do. And I send you the link once the interview is up.